Hello and welcome to the Echo Chamber podcast. My name is Tony Groves and we are back talking about events in NI, but it's not just events in NI, it's events in on these islands, across these islands and the games that are being played, Martin.
Yeah, quite a few games being played. What were you just looking at there a few minutes ago, Tony?
Well, I mean, the Progressive Unionist Party's Billy Hutchinson has released a statement which effectively says that they are unhappy with the Good Friday Agreement, that it's weakening the union, and that they want to step away from the deal. It's quite a substantial piece. I've only read the first six pages here, but there's a lot that's going to have to be unpicked, and we will be going to Sam McElwain to discuss it as well later on in the week. But nonetheless, it's very worrying to see that on a Monday morning in the context of what's been going on. And the reason we're referring to this is because we are joined by the Green Party councillor on Belfast County Council, Brian Smith. Brian, it's been a while since we spoke, but things have gotten politically more volatile, if anything.
Yeah, there was a bit of a lull. I think after we spoke in early April, or after that last round of violence, and it petered out. And I think part of it was around Prince Philip, the death of Prince Philip. And also I think that people maybe realised that where we were pushing ourselves to. I think in the last few days, you've seen isolated incidents in terms of Lanark Way in West Belfast and last night in Rathcoole, being linked to the protocol. There was a bus hijacked in Ards last week as well, where apparently those that hijacked it mentioned the protocol to the driver. Again, I would argue if you're going to protest outside a DUP office. The DUP gave you the protocol. The DUP delivered the protocol. This is, and I think where we are at the minute, as I was saying to you just previously, it feels weird. The last time I talked to you is, Tony, I know you said to me, Brian, you sound tired, and I was tired. This time it feels like there's some sort of lull. We're waiting on people marshalling their troops, whatever strategies are going to be played. And it feels like we're kind of in no man's land at the minute. But the fact is that the ramifications and the impact hits working class communities the most, yet again. And those most socially deprived within Belfast and Greater Belfast. If you look at Rathcoole, high area of poverty within working class unionist loyalism. Lanark Way on both sides, suffering high levels of poverty as well. You know, so these protests, this violence is being brought to areas that are flashpoints that are also where people are the most vulnerable, that they're already being hammered. So, you know, they're already dealing with multiple issues. Again, I talked the last time about multiple crises. We're still dealing with multiple crises. So it feels weird at the minute. It feels like we're in no man's land.
But you heard, you referenced the fact that they're trying to relate this, people feeling disempowered, you know, not presence in society, whether that's social mobility, whether that's educational attainment, whether that's just being able to get a decent housing, Brian, and decent, you know, decent job for decent pay, all of those things, those inequalities that are baked in. And then they throw it at you. Well, it's actually this displeasure towards the protocol. It just seems to be the protocol itself that doesn't bear out in some of the polling we've seen. The protocol seems to be not universally loved, far from it, but certainly in a situation that there seems to be a voice there amongst a lot of the communities that just say, we got to make it work somehow.
Mm-hmm. So I think, I don't know if you've seen last week, there was a poll from the University of Liverpool came out, and it was a red-ranging poll on where the political parties are polling at the minute, the constitutional question. There was a lot of arguments about how hard that poll was weighted. But for me, the most interesting thing was around how DUP voters and those in unionism view the protocol. Now, I suspect a lot of them aren't happy, but the overriding feeling was mitigate, get something sorted, and let's get on with it. So there's those voices out there on the ground that aren't being shown in the reality, of our political reality. They're being ignored. So there's games being played. Jeffrey Donaldson made a deadline at the end of the month. There at the end of October, start of November, that deadline's passed. We've seen this sort of low-level violence, but drivers, particularly around public transport being targeted. We've seen clashes, police being dragged in, police resources being used on community interfaces. So there's all that there. As I said again at the last time, I feel like I'm repeating myself from April, but words have impact, words have meaning, and that people are making these deadlines and they're sticking to these hard and fast things, and that the people that are suffering are ultimately the people on the ground. But there seems to be that those voices within unionism, if you go by that University of Liverpool poll last week, a lot of people just want it sorted. They don't want grandstanding. They don't want big statements. They want go and sort the thing out.
And young fellas are getting arrested now and getting a criminal record, being sent out by old fellas who know better, Brian, I think is the right way to put it. They know that they're making fodder out of these young fellas.
Working class kids have always been cannon fodder. Going back through the Troubles, it was working class kids on both sides who went out and committed some of the most heinous acts.
It was Sam who put it to us the other day where he said, they'll fight to the last drop of my blood.
Yeah, yeah. Blood martyrs, but it won't be those kids that are out there are not those old men that are making these big statements. It's not their children. Though their children are well off, they're well fed. Any of the impacts of the if Article 16 is pulled and there's any impact, it won't be our political elite who will deal with the impact of it. It will be the most vulnerable communities in this city and right across Northern Ireland. Our political elite will be okay. They make the statements, but it's others that suffer.
Brian, in the context of this conversation, we didn't know that the PUP were going to put out that statement this morning. We were aware that there's a lot of talk within Westminster of Article 16 being used and that in effect tearing up the deal. And you know, and then we see on the flip side that the EU talking about, well, if you're doing that, we're going to negate the free trade. Yeah.
So if you're going to do this, we're going to do that. The EU, there's. Again, I feel that the people of Northern Ireland are being used as political pawns.
Yes.
Not by the British government, by the European Union, by our political elite. Do you know what I mean? The DUP are stirring this up as well within their own because let's look at this. There's many different factors at play, but one of the factors at play is we're 6 months out from an election. The DUP up until recently were taking a hammer in the polls. So the TUV from the last poll have slipped back. The DUP are trying to regain that support. So there's multiple factors at play here. But again, as I keep going back, and I'm going to sound like a broken record, the people that are impacted the most are the people on the ground in those working class estates across the city. As Martin says, it's young people being sucked into political violence. Young people were, their life opportunities already are shit. You know, they've had poor education, they've had no training opportunities. There's very little for them to go. So politicians will often come out and say, we don't want young people getting criminal records because it'll stop them from traveling. They can't travel anywhere anyway. They've got no money. You know, so it's that sort of, that's the reality of it on the ground. And that's how it plays out.
If I could ask, though, one of the frustrations, I suppose, you're a Green councillor, you're also a youth worker. When you look at that and you talk about these things, Stormont was a bottleneck anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing was getting done. And then, like we see this week, the whole world and his uncle have swam across the Irish Sea to because we can't fly to the COP meeting in Glasgow. And it's in terms of, say, for you as a Green, I've got to say as a Red Green now, you might like that, but as the idea of actually taking climate action, there's nothing can be done when there's a bottleneck there and it's all about grandstanding, Brian.
It is. So from our point of view, there's two climate bills basically going through Stormont at the minute. One from our party leader, Claire Bailey, and the other one from the Environment Minister and the DUP member and former leader for about 3 weeks, Edwin Puch. Now, both those bills are like night and day. From our point of view, we're setting stringent targets. We want to declare a climate emergency from the date of Royal Assent, set an overreaching objective of net zero by 2045, put in place independent process and an environmental agency, independent environmental agency, because we've been dealing with serious environmental breaches of the law for decades, but nothing has happened. Puch's is 82% reduction by 2050, going back from 1990, no independent oversight. It's a lot more lax. You get the feeling that a lot of the big agri-food sector, the Ulster Farmers Union, are weighing in behind that there as well. So you've got that there. And I understand. Stormont's been down for 3 years. Stormont, now there's a raft of private members' bills coming through. Everybody's trying to get legislation through before next May, before before we go into a new month, before we go into an election and a new mandate. That's just it. I understand when people's frustrations and people think that Stormont is an ineffective shit show. And that's a pantomime. And go ahead, Martin.
You mentioned agriculture there, but in reality, agriculture is doing quite well because of the protocol. You know, it's working the way it was meant to work. Is there a disconnect between their political and their economic view?
100%. The anger around the protocol, from where I'm standing, as I said before, I'm not a loyalist, I'm not a unionist, but from where I'm standing looking in, the anger, particularly with the political elite, is around that they created the conditions that led to the protocol. Now that they've seen a sea border erected down the middle of the Irish Sea, and that they feel that they've been cut adrift from the rest of the United Kingdom, and that they're angry at that, so they want the protocol to go. And it's principle after principle, and it's lots of grandstanding, but they're not taking into account the economic, the further economic damage and impact that it could have to people, particularly, as I keep going back, the most vulnerable working class communities within Northern Ireland.
And again, I don't want to keep going over, but when we talk about that, you talk about the economic benefits that the people have seen of the protocol, but we also have to talk about that sense of loss of cultural identity and then a weakening of the ties of the union. That's a problem for Brexiteers. They did this.
It is, but I also, Brexit was sold. The DUP jumped on this. The DUP jumped on Brexit and sold it to their voter base, all singing, all dancing. It was going to be unicorns and rainbows, and everything was going to be great. I mean, a new Britain, almost like that Empire Mark II. Yet we disconnected ourselves from our biggest trading base, and now we're going looking trade deals with Fiji and Norway and places miles away. And we're talking about we want a trade deal with the United States. But what happens? And I'm no expert on the protocol, just like many others are. A lot of people have ideas about the protocol. Let's be honest, not very many of us understand it, because it's a deeply complex international trade agreement between the United Kingdom and the European Union. You know, it's so. But what sort of impact is it going to have? And I think that we're only early into the protocol. It's going to take a couple of years before we work out what are the pros, what are the cons. But as I said, as I go back, I think there's a more sort of pragmatic base within unionism. And that base is out on that those voters out there, and they're saying, mitigate, sort it out, and let's just get on with it. And let's make Northern Ireland work. I think that this is the big thing here for unionism at the minute. It's hard to make Northern Ireland work. And I think that Brexit has had a huge psychological impact. Let's not take that away. And I don't want to be pointing the finger, because I think we've got to understand where unionism is and where loyalism is. And it's easy to mock, and there's a lot of stuff. They're an easy target on social media, particularly, because sometimes some of those people who do the most shouting within loyalism and unionism make the biggest fools out of the rest of the base. And I think that there's something there. I work on the ground within loyalist communities within certain parts of East Belfast.
Brian, it's easier to fight culture wars than it is to actually make things work.
We see that
everywhere. Like, we see that here. We see everything everybody shouts. If you make a suggestion here about housing, they say you're being ideological, you know, and we get this nonsense. Whereas it's much easier to have that conversation than it is to actually deal with, to actually make things work, whether it's a climate bill or it's affordable housing or it's cuts to people's home heating, allowances.
Maybe there's a question there just in terms of our democracies are set up, because we're going from election cycle to election cycle. There's nothing there long term. There's a democratic deficit in terms of what you shared about housing, and you're seen as some sort of communist. Actually, I want people to have homes. I know that makes sound novel, but I want people to have homes. I want to see the end of food banks. I think food terms like fuel poverty, the working poor. So I want people to go out and earn a decent day's pay and not still be reduced to a frigging food bank. I want people to have their dignity. And I think there's been a lot of that, but I think a lot of that has been stripped away from people. And you add that on top of where we are. As I've said before, because the last time, we're dealing with multiple crises. We're dealing with Stormont being down for 3 years. It is not a peace process. This is a political process. we're dealing with Brexit, we're dealing with a protocol, we're dealing with a failure of our legacy. They address that. We're seeing the moves that the UK government are making in terms of just wanting an amnesty and wanting to push that through. Who's that going to impact on the most? That's going to impact on people, particularly victims in Northern Ireland, victims on both sides, victims right across the board, who are going to feel a huge sense of injustice and have been ignored and left behind. Again, we're political pawns.
You sound a bit pessimistic, Brian, but there is some hope in that, as you mentioned, the middle, the people who don't identify as either nationalist or loyalist, and they are pretty much in the middle, they're willing to see a change and they carry votes.
I am not. I may turn pessimistic this morning, but I think I'm fairly optimistic. I think that there's a lot. I look at where we've come from in 23 years. We have come a long way. But I still think we need to have these conversations. And I think sometimes you hear politicians say, we need to have difficult conversations. And the last thing they do is have difficult conversations. I think we need to be honest. And I think we need to, as Tony said, we need to go beyond these culture wars. It's easy to get sucked into these culture wars, but we need to go into the things behind, the nuance, the real detail. The things that are going to make, the things that are going to move us on, the things that are going to make people think. And it's social media is not good for think, and the media is not good for think. It's all one thing after another. It's instant gratification or it's instant anger. And we run from the next outrage to the next outrage, and it just goes on and on. But I think if we're actually to progress as a society, we need to kind of get into those sort of nuances. We need to get into those conversations with each other. And now we need to acknowledge where we are. We need to front up on where we are as a society.
We're seeing that with the Women's Council met, North and South, and they had a very good discussion. It does seem that some groups are just getting on with it. and they're having the conversations that need to have. Is there a gender element to this? Is it the women are? Because there is in every society a gender element where the women carry the heavy weight of organisation and the men do the shouting. Is that what's going on up north as well?
I think that there's maybe something there in terms of just women are ignored because of our society, the way our political structures are set up. And I say this as a straight, middle-aged white man. So it's easy for me. But I sit on, there's four councillors in Belfast, four green councillors in Belfast. I'm the only straight man. The joke among us is two queers, a feminist and a smick. I'm the smick. I'm the minority in this office, and it's great. But I think there's, in terms of just not what the wider women's movement, I think there's something there, that the real change that we're seeing, the real push for change in Northern Ireland, and maybe down south here, maybe this is something that you can maybe expand on a bit, because as I told you before, we have enough to keep ourselves busy up here. I don't really take too much notice of what's going on down south. So we look at the climate protests at the weekend. That's being organised by civic society. Mm. It's young people. That's young people, that's youth groups, that's community groups. One of our councillors yesterday was at a church service, a Presbyterian church service in East Belfast, around the climate. So that sort of thing, that somebody made a comment at the weekend, and I don't think it was particularly helpful, that prods don't care. Actually, hold on a minute, prods do care. A lot of people care about this. So let's get beyond those sort of stereotypes. But there is a conversation, there's something there that's coming from civic society. But it's always been through civic society. It was civic society that pushed both sides to call ceasefires years ago in the mid-90s in 94, that we're weary. Our communities are wore down. We're done. Stop killing each other. We need a process. We need something different than this. We don't want our children being sucked into this as the previous generation war. So there's always something there, Martin, as you hit upon, not just women's groups, but wider civic society that is driving and changing those conversations.
I would just caveat everything, though, on the basis that there is an element in unionism, and we see it this morning with Billy Hutchinson's statement. We see it with the DUP moving closer to TUV. We see that they're, you're saying you're 6 months out from an election. They'd like to think they're only a few months out from election because they're on an election footing, Brian, and they want, it seems by the idea of doing that, they want to make the election about strengthening the union as opposed to actually working together. And whether you think that's a winning strategy politically or not, I don't know who looks into that, but if you ask me what we think down south, we'll just welcome that awful simplistic mindset whereby you have journalists here who refer to these conversations that you and I are having now as, oh, you're encouraging armchair republicanism, or you're talking along things along sectarian lines. Far from it. We want to see a space. You see, you know, events like the Shared Futures event in Dublin this weekend, where parties members from other parties across the spectrum all spoke. A leading member of the Muslim community in Ireland spoke, and they talked about how we have to have these conversations. My concern is that when I speak to people in leading positions in unionism, they don't want to really have some of these conversations for fear of looking like they're engaged in a process that would weaken their union, and that is their thing. Now, again, that sounds like I'm speaking.
That's understandable. If I was a unionist, yeah, why do I want to engage in something that undermines the union? Why would you ask? Would you ask Republicans? Let's get involved in a conversation about strengthening the union. You know, so I understand that there. I think that there's maybe a bigger question for unionism in terms of selling the union, the benefits of it, a broader, more sort of inclusive union that instead of what the DUP have sold for the last few decades. So I think some people are getting it. I think very much so. That's coming through from civic groups on the ground within unionism. They want to see something broader, more inclusive, that isn't anti-Catholic, that isn't anti-gay, that reaches out to communities, that gives people a voice, that those people, particularly within working class unionist lawyers communities, who have been ignored by their own political class. I don't think that's a bad thing. You know, and for me as well, I'll probably get into trouble here, when people talk about a shared island, and like I said, we're 6 months out from the union, or sorry, 6 months out from an election. And you're right, Tony, I think we may see save the union, strengthen the union, but also we want to see talk about a border poll. My question is the Republicans, somebody sitting in the middle here, where's the plan? Where's the plan on a border poll? I keep hearing Think 32, Shared Island, come together, blah, blah, blah. That's great. Give me, what are you going to do in terms of an all-island health service? What are you going to do in terms of the constitutional place of Northern Ireland if it becomes part of 32, if 6 becomes part of 32? Is there going to be a period of federalism? Also, big thing for me, with a Protestant wife, what are you going to do for those 900,000 Ulster Protestants? Where do they fit into this? Because I think there's a fear within Ulster Protestantism and within unionism that they're going to be ignored, that maybe the shoe's going to be in the other foot in terms of, I grew up with unionist supremacy. I grew up in a Republican area. But I think some unionists are now thinking, hold on a minute, we can end up getting this back to us. This could almost, you know, so are we going to repeat the same mistakes? Is a new Ireland going to be the old mistakes? So how do you, and unionists won't engage on that, but I think that there's a question there for that broader sort of shared island conversation and Sinn Féin and the wider Republican movement. How do you leave a door open for unionism? Is there going to be a minority bill of rights? So get into nuance, get into detail, instead of just let's have this conversation.
I think they will have to, if that's all completely fair, and again, I don't want to speak, Mary Lou McDonald did say health service is going to come before flags, you know, all those things. People are aware of those, but we have political failures here. We can't even get Sláinte Care off the ground. That's 5 years behind.
You have a massive housing crisis.
Yeah. So, you know, all of that has to actually look like, you have to know, if you're going to use the corporate speak, you have to know what success would look like, you know, and you have to, and there has to be representation and voices at the table. And then there also has to be mindful of the case, as you said, that unionists won't actually engage with the process that they feel is weakening the union. But if the event of the morning after something seismic like a border poll was to take place, the door has to be left immediately open and an invitation has to be immediately extended. Because
the door has to be left open now.
Yes, but
it is open now,
Brian. But it's been said time and time again to me that there's no interest in actually coming to the table. Some talks are happening informally. Absolutely, they're happening informally.
Under no doubt, there's stuff. There's always a subtext. There's stuff going on in the background. But for me, it's hard to use shape. So what I would say in terms of Ireland's future, those sort of conversations, what are you doing? People need to have a plan. I think it's Mary Lou McDonald's right, that it will come down to the bread and butter issues that will come down. Now, how much is going, will I be okay? Will there be more money in my pocket if we go down south? If we go all in, if we go all in Irish unity, will there be a health service? If my child comes down with cancer, am I not scrambling around for insurance? I know that the state are going to come in and look after my child. You know, so, and I think you're, I think you're spot on to acknowledge there are huge issues in terms of the structure in the south. Because I don't know enough, but I do know when you talk about Sláintecher, and I do, one thing I do pick up on looking down south, that there's a massive housing crisis and young people have been badly let down. Particularly in Dublin and that sort of greater Dublin. And that's my fear up here, that we're going to make the same mistakes as Dublin in terms of rents skyrocketing and we're forcing people out. That whole gentrification, that whole properties getting bought by these private equity companies and being taken away from young people and giving them a future. And that sort of mad communist stuff that actually, you know what, we need to give these kids a home.
Yeah.
And can't argue with that, Brian. Simply cannot argue with that. That's a failure down here. And it's a failure that's felt very acutely by a section of society down here. But the section of society who make the decisions on whether we're going to have a universal health care, whether we're going to provide housing, they don't care. And they simply don't. We've seen it time and time again. But I don't think they're looking to the north. I think they're looking, as is happening up north, very much at their own self-interests. In that a proper health service and a proper housing plan doesn't benefit the government that's there at the moment. And it does, they're not interested in a united Ireland. There are a few politicians, and actually we'll say this, it's come up on our radar, that Neil Richmond is talking about it and actually talking a very good game at the moment. But, you know, the rest in his party, they've no real compulsion or insight into having Sláintecher or equivalent, or to having a decent housing set up.
They think they have, Martin. They think they have a plan, but the plan is to delay, unfortunately. And when you see the privatization and financialization of housing in Ireland, it's been one of the biggest successes of funds in taking what was a public housing right and commodifying it. And Ireland has been phenomenally successful in doing something that is actually making things more difficult as we talk about this. But I would argue that we're no further along in that, no matter who's in power, Martin. That's just we've had 100 years of these parties in power, and that's the way they've chosen to go. So I don't know if you think that there's an alternative that's really going to make any radical change.
I think there's a deliberate inability to move forward.
No.
And I think the North is part of that as well.
Every one of them will tell you they want to see a united Ireland. Every one of them to a man. Whether they're willing to actually campaign for it, actively look for it, and actively do the work that needs to be done, have the hard conversations, and actually show people, give people a vision of what it would look like. Mm. That's a different thing. It's easy to say a soundbite and say, yes, of course, I'd like to see this and it'd be great to see it in my lifetime. This real vague stuff that we hear all the time. But if I'm sitting where Brian's sitting and I'm thinking educational achievement, well, actually it's probably fair to say, Brian, a step up a little bit in terms of our education system has been doing relatively well, performing in ways, but there's still it's still quite dominated by the Catholic Church. You don't want people coming into a system that is 90% owned by the Catholic Church. That's not a model. There has to be a separation.
There are issues with our education system. There is, getting back to that sort of unionist working. I'm not a spokesperson for unionism or loyalism, but the biggest group who don't do well within our education system are working class Protestant boys. But here, if you're talking about, to go slightly back on the housing, and I'd say this, I have no problems in this. I like a lot of what Owen O'Brien says. I really do like a lot of what he says. But when I look up here, I would love him to email as some of his colleagues up here, because there's a private tenancy bill coming through the north from a Sinn Féin minister, Deirdre Hargey. There's nothing in it about rent controls. He's talking about rent controls in the south. So where's the joined up policy on that?
You can't argue with it. And you can say the same for health as well. You can say the exact same for health. There are plans here even though they have been shelved, Tony, effectively for sláinte care. But at least there's plans.
But let's tell the truth. Sinn Féin can stand and wave a banner saying the North is next, Martin, and then abstain on a vote for April. They abstained on a vote, and then recently they abstained on another vote. So they all. That's why I say to you, I think you're living in cloud cuckoo land, Martin. If you think replacing Fine Gael with another party is going to change anything. Oh, you're right, Brian, that Eoin Óibrín has some wonderful ideas about housing that might actually change some of that. But then he has to still deal with the Department of Housing when he goes in, and the permanent government remains. I conscious of time, Brian, if we can be optimistic on this, the next couple of weeks are going to be rough. There's no two ways about it.
I think that for me, I wanted to say this at the start, but I'll say it now. I'm still fairly optimistic. I think that there's going to be a game played. People are almost like a choreographer at anger, outrage. But let's wait a few weeks. Let's see how this pans out. That's when you'll see how this really goes. The UK government may pull Article 16. So some of the unionism in the DUP and within that sort of faction within loyalism may get excited. But the UK government still need to go in and deal with the European Union without getting into a trade war. And I think that the Tories don't want a trade war, and they're also conscious of they'll never get a trade deal with the United States. So there are multiple factors in play here. So from my point of view, yes, the PUP have withdrawn support for the Good Friday Agreement. This morning, there has been sporadic outbreaks of violence across Northern Ireland over the last week. I still think, and I really hope that nobody gets hurt here. That's the first thing. And I hope kids don't get criminalized. And I hope nobody gets hurt. I wish there was peace. But I think that let's give this a few weeks and maybe check back in then. I think that's when you'll see the real game. At the minute, as I said to you at the start, I feel like we're in no man's land. It's all a wee bit uneasy. And we're all just waiting to see what happens.
Yeah, it's back. People have been marched up the hill again, Brian. And let's just hope that they're marched back down again quietly. Thanks for coming on and having this conversation with us this morning. I know it's a difficult conversation, Brian. And at the outset, you said we have to have difficult conversations.
We have to.
Well, this is a difficult conversation. There's failings on all sides. There's failings from all directions.
And I appreciate just giving me a window in to talk, because people in the South will hear this. And I think that sometimes they don't hear this. And I think that there's voices out there that are fantastic voices. Like, I've just quickly, just something that's just come into my head. If people are interested in loyalism in the South and they want to maybe on social media, there's an account called Her Loyal Voice.
Yeah.
But working class loyalist women.
Oh, I follow it.
Brilliant. It's brilliant. And it's looking at a section of loyalism that has often been ignored. But as you said, it's the women. Do you know what I mean? It's the women that hold things together. It's the women that drive that change. And I think that there's something there for maybe some of your viewers. Go and have a look at that account, because it's really interesting and it comes from a different angle. And it's very class-based.
Oh, it is, absolutely. And it's always worth checking in when something else happens to get their what's been said on that viewpoint. You know, it's the idea of the echo chamber was supposed to be ironic, Brian. You know, we were hoping to broaden those conversations. Unfortunately, Martin doesn't play well with others. but look, thanks for taking the time to talk to us. We will touch back in, and I do think you're right. There's a lot of things. Things been pushed onto the field at the moment, pawns being put in place and moves left, right and centre. But unfortunately, the ones that tend to suffer are the people of Northern Ireland in this. And that's the idea of mitigating that must be what should be what's motivating the politicians, rather than just stuff about ripping up a protocol or reneging on the Good Friday Agreement. We need to look beyond that. Brian, thanks very much again. And lads, we are live on Wednesday in the Sugar Club. I think there's a handful of tickets left, so grab them if you can. They may be gone already. And then we have, I spoke earlier about the leader, one of the leaders of the Muslim community in Ireland. He is talking on the podcast tomorrow afternoon. So yeah, we stay busy. Talk to you all very, very soon. Take care. Bye bye.
Tony and Martin, Martin and Tony, speaking to interesting people only. It's the Echo Chamber podcast. Subscribe now on on pay.